Welcome back, everybody, to the X-Cast. The truth is in here. I'm your host, Tony Black, as ever. And once again, for the second week running, you lucky devils, I am joined by Mr. Andrew Brooker.
Hello, mate.
How you doing? You all right?
I am good, thank you, mate. And yourself?
All right, yeah, I'm okay. I feel renewed this week. I feel born again.
Wow.
See what I did. Not that I'm cheesy, not that I'm running out of ways to introduce this podcast, but yeah, we're going to be covering Born Again, which is the next episode on our voyage through season one. But before we do, I'd just like to, uncharacteristically at this point in the podcast, but I'd like to remind you all to subscribe to us on iTunes and let us get rid of this bloody season six DVD. From Matt Lamborn. It might have gone by now, actually. But if it hasn't, all you've got to do is leave us a review on iTunes, okay? And you'll get a free bit of merch come through your door. So, simple as that.
Can't say fairer than that. Free shit.
Free shit, yeah. I just want to put that on the Twitter. Just in big, bold letters, pinned to the Twitter profile. Free shit! Yeah, but people might think I'm doing some sort of protest. Anyway, we're going to crack on and talk about Born Again. So, let's do this. Born Again is the 22nd episode of the first season of The X-Files. It first aired on April 29th, 1994, and was written by Howard Gordon and Alex Ganza, directed by Gerald Friedman. The episode sees Mulder and Scully investigating an 8-year-old girl who is connected to the killings of two policemen that Mulder suspects may be connected to a past life.
How'd you hear about us?
My brother. My brother's a cop. Baltimore. He told me about your work on the Toombs case. He said you got a good feel for things. Out of the ordinary. Look, the truth is Barbala never won any popularity contests here at the 1-4... But he's still a cop, you know. I guess that's why I can't just let this rest.
You said there was one witness, a little girl. What did she say happened?
She said there was another man in the room.
Well, it stands to reason that somebody...
I was right outside. I'm telling you, there was nobody else there except for Barbala and the kid.
So you didn't get a description of who the kid saw?
I'm telling you, there was no one else. Listen. The department's treating this as a suicide, but I gotta tell you, I knew this guy. There's no way he did himself.
Was he depressed or under psychiatric care of any kind?
No. The only time he ever looked at himself was in the mirror, and he always liked what he saw.
Out of 10, then, Brooker, what are you gonna go with for Born Again?
I don't know. I feel like I'd be being really mean if I said, like, 4, 4.5.
Be mean.
I don't want to make it sound like this is a good episode. Unless I say, you know, I'm going to say 4.5 because I don't, 4.5 for me, I think.
It's pretty average, isn't it? I mean, it's not terrible, but there's nothing really in this to make you go, well, to make you remember it. We were talking off air, weren't we, just before about how I think both of us came and watched this, and because it's so bland, we haven't revisited it half as much as many of the other episodes, and we were like, oh, this has got this in it. Oh, fine.
It was a bizarre moment when you go, oh, I don't remember this. And I have to admit, it wasn't until maybe like the halfway mark when things start appearing. You're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember this. And, you know, if it's taken 22 minutes of your 45-minute episode for me to remember it, that's pretty poor.
Yeah, it's. I think I'd go with... Between 4, 4.5. Again, I don't really know. If I could give it 4.25, I might. Because it's just... I think I'm going to go with 4. I really am. Because I think that it's got certain ideas in it and certain things in it that are interesting. But it's done in such a dull procedural way that I just was sitting there going, well, I know where this... I either know where this is going or it's just all a bit wet, a bit boring. You know,
yeah.
and a bit like a bad episode of The Bill, you know.
yes, it is.
Yeah.
And maybe the best way ever of describing it.
For anyone who doesn't know what The Bill is, it was basically a long, long-running British police drama that ended up really becoming a soap, effectively. a soap opera, a police soap opera, really. And then eventually, it was like, it's got to be about 10 years ago now, isn't it, really? 5-10 years ago, it was cancelled. And it's still probably the most iconic British police drama we've ever had. But a lot of it was shit, really.
It was guff all the way. It's one of those shows. Me and a mate of mine have a theory. If you tell me that you're a British actor and you've not been in The Bill or Casualty, you're not actually a British actor.
Yeah. Everyone has been in one of them, haven't they? Even however famous they are now, you know, people like Tom Hiddleston, Tom Hardy, I bet you they've been in it. I bet you they've been
almost
in either The Bill or Casualty. Yeah, you can guarantee it, can't you? Yeah, it was just one of those shows that it was like, it's there, it's average, it's got average acting, it's got average storylines. And this whole episode made me think, well, for The X-Files, I know we're still in the first season, but for The X-Files, this is just like a boring cop show that they've just lobbed a creepy little girl into. And I just went, I'm not interested, I'm not bothered. And I think the people behind the scenes thought similar. This was actually meant to be the last episode that Alex Ganza wrote or co-wrote for the show. He'd been on paternity leave and he came back and then he decided he wasn't going to do it anymore. But he did chip in later to Dodd Calm in season 2 with Howard Gordon. But that was it. He didn't do any more after that.
So now that is a good episode.
Yeah, Dodd Calm's really good.
it's a bizarre episode.
It's really mad, but it's...
It is at least fun, which this episode is not.
I don't quite know how it possibly got out of what it did, Dodd Calm. But... Because it really shouldn't have done, but it did.
No.
But yeah, this is just a bit boring. And it's funny because Howard Gordon and Alex Ganza do flit a bit in this season. They do about 6 episodes and they don't always get the mixture right, really. The episodes they've done are Conduit, which we both thought was all right, but, you know, Ghost in the Machine, which was a bit shit. Fallen Angel, which we talked about, which was all right, I suppose. Lazarus, which we talked about, which was all right. And Born Again, really. And it's none of them are standouts, are they?
No, this dude is really kind of, he's found his spot in the middle of the road and he's not moving, is he?
Yeah, exactly. Apparently as well that the character of Michelle Bishop, the girl, was meant to be a boy, but she was changed during casting, which is interesting, quite the decision that was made there. And there was a few problems they had with writing. There was, I will talk about this later, but the very unusual and never used again method of Mulder writing a journal and then doing a voiceover, which was really weird.
Yeah, I found that when I watched it last night. I was like, this is bizarre. This is, we have, you know, it's Scully's job to wrap up the episode for me. Why is Mulder doing it? More importantly, why is he doing it on such a bland, mediocre case?
I know, really weird. Apparently, Howard Gordon said it was desperation that resulted in Mulder doing the report. He said, we'd written a scene that was the traditional wrap-up scene with the mother looking fondly at her daughter, who's now cured of her possession. And we said, this is really hokey. This is awful. And then they did that.
Because that made everything better.
Yeah. Really. Just like, no, it doesn't. It, like you said, it's Scully's job. And it just really feels out of place just having him suddenly journaling and doing the voiceover and doing the dot connecting, which only happens like twice in the episode anyway. It's very weird. And it just doesn't really work. And like the episode in general doesn't really work. Howard Gordon wasn't too happy with it. He even said it was a little too cop showy for his liking. And that's exactly what it is. It's a very bland cop showy story. But still, we'll talk about it. We'll find some things in there, even if it's to just take the piss.
So, absolutely.
Absolutely. So, let's dig a little deeper on Born Again. The episode begins and we're supposed to believe we're in New York. I don't know about you, I thought, that's definitely Vancouver.
Well, yeah, I don't think I thought it was definitely Vancouver. I did think that's definitely not New York.
Yeah, I'm perhaps being slightly unkind.
Well, I mean, only because I've never been to Vancouver.
No, me neither. So I am. I'm being unkind and full of shit.
But you definitely look and you go, this is not New York Cop. This is and actually the only thing that makes me think that this might be New York is Maggie Wheeler, and that's only because she was in Friends.
Well, I was going to say, I forgot she was in this, and in my head, as soon as she came on, I went, "Oh my god!"
But if your connection to New York is so tenuous that it's based on another fictional character from a TV show that doesn't start until a year after this episode aired. That's pretty poor.
Yeah, because this was before Friends, wasn't it? This was like about six months before Friends started.
Absolutely.
So, nobody knew her as Janice. She was just an actress at this point. But, yeah, you're right. It is a bit of a tenuous connection. And, you know, the teaser obviously is introducing the detective who ends up being the victim, Barbala. Who, you know, and I know we're not supposed to care, but he is a real prick, isn't he, straight away? He's a real sort of sexist, leery wanker.
Absolute bell end from the second he's on the screen. And you kind of, you're glad he's gone when he goes. Yeah, you really deserve that, mate, you know. And I do kind of wonder if you're supposed to think, you really deserve that.
I suppose, given what we find out about the cops later.
Given the way the episode plays out.
But at that point, we don't know that, do we? He's a cop who's like, just a cop, and we're not, you know, we don't know. It's one of those things where, we haven't got much sympathy when he gets, presumably, whatever happens to him, pushed out the window, levitated out the window, whatever happens, but he goes out the window anyway. And the thing is, this is the thing, I think, conceptually, it's quite a good little idea. You know, having a girl who just seemingly is abandoned, comes in, he's really silent and creepy, and then suddenly a detective crashes out of like a fourth story window or whatever. I think that's quite a cool and very weird idea that a kid could do that or something else, but it never really lives up to the promise of that, really, the episode.
No, I think this is kind of, this is where I sit when we're talking about, when you mentioned earlier that it has ideas, it just doesn't quite know what to do with them.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it is a really cool and really creepy idea. This little girl wandering around with this thing following her around. You're like, this could be awesome. It's like it's like Damien, but creepier.
Yeah, yeah.
But the way it actually plays out, it's just a little bit flat.
Yeah, flat.
Just kind of shit.
I think that sums it up. Yeah, it's just like you said, it could have been a bit of a Damien, because that's kind of what they're going for. You know, whenever that was presumably why they wanted a boy. You know, at the beginning, they probably were going for a very Damien-like child, creepy omen vibe to this.
Yeah.
But having a girl is more interesting when it turns out, you know, that she's got the soul of a cop, of a male cop. You know, that is more of an interesting idea, that he would be reborn in a girl. But, they don't really use it to its maximum potential, even after an interesting conceptual idea in the teaser. But once we're through the teaser, we've got Mulder and Scully getting there because Janice... And I'm going to call her Janice. I think her name's... What is her name in the episode?
I couldn't tell you. That's how forgettable this episode is. It's been less than 24 hours since I watched it, I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, I watched it 2 hours ago. I've got no excuse.
It's like Lazard.
Lazard. Yeah, I don't like
that. Isn't that the guy from Police Academy?
Commandant Lazard, yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, wow. There's a real lack of imagination in this episode from start to finish, really, wasn't there?
We definitely... I wish the whole episode they'd named all the characters after Police Academy characters. So you'd have had a Mahoney,
Harris. That would have been brilliant.
That would have been great. What was the name of the... You know, Captain Harris. Move it. What was the name of his stooge? He was always with him. Proctor.
Yes, Proctor.
You could have had Proctor. I just want to go and watch the Police Academy films now, if I'm honest.
Yeah. That's a binge worthy of doing at some point.
It is. I've got a real fondness for Citizens on Patrol, mainly because it's got a lot of Bobcat Goldthwait in it as Zed.
Zed is one of my favourite characters.
Zed is it's when he's talking to like the WI and he's doing a speech to these women and he does a poem.
I love it. He's such a cool actor. He's so funny in those films.
Brilliant. I had a Zed I did the voice, not very good, but I did that as my voicemail once. So it was like, please leave a message after the tone. I got told by someone who I worked, I used to work for this, and they used to say, you need to change your voicemail because you're going to get like professional calls. And it's you going, please leave a message.
No, that would be amazing.
I know, and I did, sadly. I got rid of it. And to this day, I now think back and think, that voicemail was more worthwhile than the job. And yeah. I wish I'd have kept it. But anyway, off topic. I'm gonna call her Detective Janice. She then does mention that it's her brother who knew of Mulder and Scully. And she mentions Toombs, which is, you don't get that very often. You don't get a bit of continuity carryover, do you, in episodes?
No, there's not much. Because that's real, like, oh, you've done this once before. And for that to happen in a not mythology episode, that's really cool. It's not done enough, and it really should have been done a little bit more, actually.
Yeah, I don't see why not. I think, as I say, had we be living in a world where, one day the X-Files will be remade eventually, and I think when it is, in 10, 20 years' time, whatever, you will have a much more serialised show, and I think you will get a lot more of that. A lot more of people connecting things up and you know, links back. But I did like that. I thought it was throwaway, but it worked. Because quite often they do turn up and you do think, well, how do you know about this? How do you know about this case? It's like it's on the other side of the country and you've got there when the crime scene's still fresh. How do you know about it? So
yeah, you always kind of got the, I hear you like stuff like this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, you like paranormal things. But never actually mentioning Kate by name, which is quite cool.
No, I think that's good. Yeah. So you've got now the whole, you know, the almost like a locked room mystery. You know, how did this detective seemingly commit suicide? Although, you know, as Mulder says, people don't tend to jump through the window. They tend to open it and jump out. So you've got that element. And they start layering clues in throughout this episode as to what's going on, even though all the way through, you kind of feel like you're one step ahead of Mulder and Scully, which is always the worst episodes of The X-Files are always the ones where you're ahead of them. You're not either with them or behind them. You're ahead of them.
No, you're sitting there watching them going, just get there.
Yeah.
Get there. You know, we've been there for 10 minutes. Yeah. You know, just get on with it.
And this is one of them. But you've got the first clue is when they're reconstructing the face of who Michelle says she saw in the room. And you've got all the funny thing with the mustaches and that old technology. You get the little flicker on the screen, which then brings up the image of the dead cop, Charlie Morris, who we find out about later. So that's clue number one. There's some weird shit going on. But I think the big thing with this is, I don't think this episode has any internal logic in terms of what it's doing. Because Michelle is possessed, right? Or she's reincarnated, or she's psychokinetic, or she's got a poltergeist with her. Yeah. And I don't think the episode ever knows which one of them is the case. Because every single time something happens, it seems to go from one to another. It's almost like she's all of these things because when the episode needs them to be.
Yes, you get to, they pick and choose what would forward the story at that particular point.
Yeah.
I think you you're completely right, and it's a real issue when you kind of go, you know, she has the soul of a dead cop, but she knows what he looks like.
Right.
That's not quite right now, is it?
No, because how would she? I don't know. I don't get it. I'm like, well, I don't think it knows either.
The problem is the episode is so throwaway and so bland. You don't care enough to question it.
No. No, exactly. Because you've kind of got an idea. You know, you get the whole thing revealed when we find out a bit more about Michelle and her backstory, about how she can do origami, and, you know, whenever she's around water, she screams. And then, you know, the mother's going, oh, she's not a normal kid. It's like, well, no shit, right? And so obviously, you, in your head, you're going, right, well, the origami is a sign then that something else, she's got those skills somewhere else. If she's screaming around water, then something traumatic has happened in water. And you're like, well, we get it. You know, we know something's weird. Just get to the point. And I was just, you know.
You hurry up and tell us, please.
Yeah, just get on with it. Mulder does then come up with the first one, which is psychokinesis. But it's one of those things as well where in the early episodes of The X-Files especially, whenever he says something that it's likely to be, it never is. So in Shadows he says, it might be telekinesis. And it's not, because it turns out to be a poltergeist.
Yeah.
And then in Fire, he says, it might be spontaneous combustion. And it's not, because it turns out to be the other thing. And in this, as soon as he says psychokinesis, I go, it's not that, is it? Because you've said it now, like in 10 minutes. And it's a one for doing that, you know, because it's almost like slipping into formula.
It's a bit like an episode of House.
Yeah.
But right at the beginning, they say it's this, and then spend the next 40 minutes, A, proving that it's not, and B, tripping over what it might be, luckily, at the end.
Yeah. Exactly. The only difference with the X-Files is that it's usually that they trip over that they don't know what the fuck it is at the end. Or it's open to question. You also get the moment which made me laugh when Mulder's like, well, shall we go here to Scully? And she goes, well, we've got an autopsy at 7. And he says, well, that's your department. I wanted her to go, fuck you! Why am I always doing these things?
Why do I have to do the dead body?
Exactly. Oh, at that point, I swear, when I heard him say that, I went, fuck you, Mulder! And I actually said it out loud. Because I felt like, for Scully, I was like, no! It's not fair.
I don't think I've done that. I'm pretty sure I sat there and went, you're such a dick.
He is a dick. He can be a right dick sometimes. He really can be. It did lead. It gets to the scene then where Mulder goes to see Michelle's shrink. And it's most people would probably, if they do remember this conversation, remember the point where he, at the end, Mulder goes, have you ever seen her like levitating anything or any psychokinesis? And she just goes, you are joking. And he just looks at her and goes, no. Which made me laugh, as if to say, of course I'm not joking. What's wrong with you? But there was an interesting...
Why are you looking at me like I'm crazy?
Yeah. David Duchovny plays it...
question.
Yeah. David Duchovny plays it brilliantly because he just looks at her as if to say, are you crazy for questioning me? It's great. Yeah. But there's a more interesting thing in this scene where, which I picked up on, which was when he suggests regression hypnosis, which obviously is what he went through as a kid after Samantha disappeared. And she says the doctor says something like, maybe, but there's only so much that meds can do for you that Michelle was on. And he says, I'm sure, he says it in a way that suggests to me that he was medicated as a child.
Yeah.
Because it almost feels, there's a little bit of resentment in the way he says it, as if to say, I'm sure. Like, he knows what that means.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like he goes, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, I've been there and done that.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of. It's like, it's never obviously confirmed in the show, but it just made me think, well, it would make sense if they had actually got Mulder medicated after, because if Samantha left, it was traumatic for him. You know, it destroyed his entire family, which we obviously later find out. So yeah, he probably would have been on medication. It's never ever picked up on again, but it just made me, the way he plays that made me think that maybe they talked about that, which I liked. But I am picking that out there. I am reaching a bit.
You're trying to find something interesting in this episode, aren't you? I can see it.
I'm looking for things. So yeah, you get now the point where Michelle, well, the idea, this is where we you know, get the revelation about Charlie Morris, and then, you know, Detective Janice says, well, she saw a ghost. So then you're like, okay, so what is it now? Is it psychokinesis? Is it a ghost? Where are we on the spectrum of weirdness?
Pin the tail on the weird.
Pin the tail on the weirdness, yeah. And Mulder gets frustrated when Scully won't have the poltergeist idea, and her entire defence, I did laugh at this, her entire defence as to why Michelle saw Charlie Morris is that she passed a photo of him in the police. And she went, she passed that photo and she looked at it and that was it. And I thought, oh, come on, Scully. Is that all you've got?
Even you don't believe that at this point.
It then, you know, you do get that Mulder's evidence is the doll, the creepy disfigured doll with the arm off and the eye socket. Made me think of the doll in Toy Story 3.
Yeah. Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
But it leads then to Charlie Morris's old partner, which is Detective Fiore. He's immediately a bit shifty, isn't he, this dude?
Yeah, he's really... He's stereotypical. stereotypical dirty cop, though, isn't he? And the problem is, the second you see him, you go, yeah, there's something up with you.
Yeah.
And when it comes a little bit later, I said, well, you get to the reveal of what it was. You're like, well, this isn't a surprise. Why are you acting like this is a big deal? We saw that. We knew it was coming.
Yeah.
You know, you telegraphed that way too much.
Yeah, like he's making sure that he's hiding things from his wife and whatnot. And they do then immediately put him in a scene with Felder, who's the other cop involved in the conspiracy against Charlie Morris, who then left the force. And they both talk about how something happened back in the day. Charlie was killed. They knew about it. They were involved. Barbala was involved. And this is all what it's about, you know. So they don't leave us waiting ages for that. But yeah, he's, like you said, he's telegraphed. You know that this guy's shifty. You know he's up to something. Mulder and Scully know he's up to something. And then when we find that out, that's the point where we're too far ahead of those guys. You know, we know that it's all a conspiracy to cover up a murder. And you're like, well, this is a bit boring. You know, this is where it gets a lot soapy and copy, you know.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, fine.
just let it play out. Come on. Yeah. Just what we are now? We're now about 15, 20 minutes into the episode. You're like, okay, we're nearly done.
Yeah. I did find myself checking at regular intervals how far in I was. And I realised it was like 25 minutes. And I was like, oh, God. I've got another 20 minutes. And it's
that same thing you get when you're watching a crap film, and you go, oh, for crying out loud, just can it be over?
Yeah, but the annoying thing is with that, it's I get that feeling when it's an average film. You know, I can live with something terrible, because at least with something terrible, I can sit there and get angry about it and finish it and go, that was shit! But in this, when it's just average, it's not bad enough for you to stop.
I think with really, really shit, well, you probably do it as well, but I sit there and go, I'm going to tear this to pieces.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Get this kind of this psychopathic joy, you know, and you're going to annihilate this thing when it's done. But if it's just average, you just go, oh, fucking hell. And I've written reviews like this in the past as well. You go, I got to the end and I just didn't know what to do.
I think the most entertained I was possibly the seriously stupid death that Felder has, where his scarf gets trapped in the bus and it turns into speed. For a minute,
yeah. I've gotten into the habit when we do these recordings, or when I'm prepping to do these recordings, I try to watch episodes twice.
Yes, I remember you saying that.
I tried to watch it once, and then the second time I try and take notes. The problem is, the first time I sat and watched Born Again, I got to that bit and went, "What the fuck did I miss?" I must have just zoned out, because I literally like woke up and there's just a dude being dragged by a scarf.
Yeah, you're thinking,
what the fuck?
When did this happen? Yeah, but and you get this ridiculous moment where he gets off this bus and then the back of his scarf lifts magically towards the doors and then they close. And then
literally the only thing that could improve that scene is as the scarf's being pulled in, is, you know, someone doing a slide whistle.
Yeah.
It just needs that whoop as the thing goes in. Perfect.
that would be it. And then he's obviously gets strangled when the bus drives, and then the driver can't stop the brake. And then at the end, obviously Michelle is on the bus doing the only thing that young actress seems capable of doing, which is staring dead eyed into space. And you're like, well. Okay, I was just thinking, this on paper, you must have thought this was really sort of creepy and weird and tense, but it's ridiculous. It is ridiculous. And again, it doesn't hold to the internal logic, because that, I don't care if she's possessed or whatever, there's no way she could do that.
Absolutely. And the problem is actually the biggest issue that I've got with this little girl, and I know I kind of slated it in the last episode, but we've just had an episode with Toombs in. You know, Toombs is a guy... Well, you know, Michael Hutchinson is a guy that acts with his face.
Yeah.
He doesn't talk. He just looks terrifying. You can't go from that to have a little girl try and do the same thing and just look like someone's given her food she don't like. And that's just like whether or not to swallow it or spit it out.
That's a really good way of putting it. It's true. I keep thinking as well, where is her mother? Like, she keeps disappearing, right, and going God knows where. Where's the mother?
At 10 o'clock at night, she's out gallivanting on the bus. Yeah. Why isn't Mum calling the police and wondering where the fuck she's gone?
Yeah. now it's a case of everyone just steadily putting the dots together, isn't it? You know, and this is where you find out that Fiore's wife was married to Charlie. You know, she reveals that he liked origami and all this stuff. So Mulder's like, ah, he's inside the girl now. He's reincarnated. And, like, you know, Scully points out and says, well, yeah, but that doesn't, like, reconcile all the things that are going on, does it? At this point, I'm like, I don't care. I don't care. Just get me to the ending, for God's sake.
Yeah, you do. You sit there going, stop. And you want to yell at like Mulder and Scully, stop trying to bring logic to this, because the writers didn't.
No. Yeah. It has no logic. Nobody quite knows what Michelle is capable of doing, because they haven't figured it out. They haven't decided if she's possessed, then there's a spirit inside her. If she's got a ghost protecting her, like in Shadows with Lauren Kite, who had the old boss.
Yeah.
At least that understood what it was about. You know, that was very clear. As daft as that episode was, it was much more clear in what it was doing. This just doesn't know. And it gets in the way, actually. It does get in the way of the story. You do get a good scene, actually, off the back of all this, with Mulder and Scully. After you get the regression of Michelle, where she freaks out and you get more hints of, you know, Charlie, when she goes, see, they're killing me, and all this. There's a good scene between Mulder and Scully where they come into conflict over what's going on. Because Mulder's there going, look, we need to keep testing her. We need to keep doing this. And she's like, look, even if we do find out, what is it you want?
Yeah, what do you expect to get from this?
Yeah, yeah, because no court is going to ever believe any of this. So we can't prosecute anybody. What do you want? And she's right, I think, there. Because there is nothing he can get out of it except the satisfaction of knowing a man has come back from the dead in a girl.
Yeah. It's quite a cool point, actually, where you see she's back to being the voice of reason that she needs to be for the X-Files. Yeah. She's got, you know, we've seen this too many times now. We've got the answer. We've even got somewhere close to proof of what the answer is. But you don't. It doesn't get you anywhere.
Yeah.
And you get that feeling where she's like, she's almost sick of chasing for answers that don't do anything. Which I quite liked that, actually. It was very good.
No, I agree, yeah. Because it's a good point in that, you know, it's all well and good chasing the truth, but what will it change, ultimately? What will happen because of it? And this is what Mulder doesn't always think about. He's so busy chasing the truth, whatever form it is, that he doesn't start to think about what would happen when he gets it and what it's for, actually. And it's more, and you know, you understand that more with the alien mythology, because ultimately it's trying to save the world, basically. But in cases like this, what is it? What is it he wants? And that's a good little underpinning, actually. Which it's actually a cleverer idea than the episode ever is aspiring to. Actually, that's pure luck, I think, that they've come across that.
It plays to Mulder's kind of selfish nature, I think, when in scenes like that, when you get, well, you know, the only person that benefits from that is you, because you get an answer that no one else cares about and no one else is going to believe.
Yeah.
It reminds you that actually, you know, while it might not be the alien stuff and chasing his, you know, trying to find out what happened to his sister, you do get the sense that, you know, he's relentless in his pursuit in all things, not just the alien stuff.
Yeah, definitely. His obsession that has become not just about aliens and about his sister, but about everything to do with this stuff. It does override him sometimes. It does cloud his judgment. And, you know, there are a lot of episodes that do a lot more with that better later on. But,
oh, for sure.
You know, it's a good little moment of writing, though, and a good beat between the two of them. After this, though, we're just plodding off towards the end, aren't we? You know, Fiore goes home, has a bit of a go at his wife. It's all a bit soap opera. Michelle's just looking through windows going, ooh, I'm going to get you. that's about it, really. And then you're just waiting for her to do it. And it's like, okay, they're all back at HQ, scanning all the ancient-looking technology. There was stuff in that police lab that had those big computers that had, like, I don't know how to describe them, but they're like rotating pieces of film. The computers are so old. I was looking in there, I was thinking, I bet you there's more, I can do more on my phone than anything in that room now.
You could probably do more in your nearest calculator than you could do in that room there.
Yeah, it just, it does show you how how the show is dated in many respects. Certainly the first few seasons.
It is one of those shows that falls into it, though, isn't it? Because it's always about the technology they use. You know, CSI fell into this a lot. I know I do keep mentioning CSI when I think about the X-Files, but you have that thing where it's all related to the technology they have to use. And 5 years down the line, you go, hey, piss off, that's nothing, yeah. You know?
Yeah. You
know, I managed to do that on the bus.
Yeah. It's amazing, really. It is amazing when you think. And, you know, at least the new season did play a bit with that, you know, with Mulder and his confusion over his smartphone. You know, there's some nice little moments that happen that do play up to that.
Absolutely. They were some of the best bits of the latest season as well.
They were a bit quite self-knowing. But so, yeah, they're all connecting the dots, blah, blah, blah. And then you get to the end, which is inevitably where Michelle comes to Fiore and she's going to kill him. I've got mixed feelings on this because I think on the one hand, it's very like the end of Shadows, actually, where you've got somebody who is mysterious. You've got a lot of weirdness going on. You've got somebody who is a bad'un and he's being exposed as a bad'un. And then you've got lots of poltergeist things flying about, throwing around the room. You've got somebody who's in danger. Very similar to the end of Shadows with the corporate dude in the office, you know, and all that stuff. So it's, you know, it's rehashing itself already, the show. Again, you've got Mulder bursting in and trying to talk it down, and Scully doesn't see any of it again.
Yeah.
How many times has that happened now? If I had a quid, I wouldn't even need to, go to work.
But this is the thing. Do you think we're at a point kind of this late in the season where they're just, oh, we need a quick episode. Quick, just throw something together. Yeah. And they've just used all the, not even necessarily the better ideas, just some of the ideas from other episodes previous, and definitely they're more procedural ones. And it's gone, we can do a quick procedural episode here and it's all right, no one will notice, just shh.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because when I think back to the old model of how they made TV, and, you know, which isn't really old, you know, they it's not, I mean, you've still got shows doing 20, 24 episodes a year, like the comic book things on the CW.
Yeah.
But most shows now are doing less episodes and they are, you know, quite often full of stuff going on. You've got the episodes like things like Game of Thrones, where you arguably don't have enough episodes to do everything. It's gone the other way around. But I look back and I think the problem with doing these 23, 24 episode seasons is, fuck me, you do get a lot of filler. And because you've got a 24 episode order, you've got to find stuff to fill that. And there is, really, you could probably cut out a third of the X-Files, in theory. You could.
The thing you can do, you can usually look at like an original air date, and you can tell that something else was going on at the time. You tend to see this a lot with the back end, you know, like at the start of second halves of seasons, when they kind of come in mid-January. But you do tend to find that it's almost like taking out the trash time.
Yeah.
There's something else happening, so we can squeeze that episode out there. I mean, I'm not sure if that's the case here. Certainly nowadays it's something that you see a lot. But I'm not sure, because obviously it's not like the recent season where they've moved things around. Because this one, like we said earlier, they mentioned Tombs. So it's clearly set, you know, the episode or just after Tombs.
Yeah.
So there's definitely something going on there, but it does feel like we're just going to squeeze this episode out. We know it's a bit of a crap one, so we'll just chuck it here.
You do get that feeling. You do get that feeling. And, you know, it does happen in most seasons of The X-Files, really. Season one is particularly bad for it. And, you know, by this point, you know, there's been a lot of excuses during us recording the X-Cast about, oh, they're still finding their feet, you know, it's the first season.
We're at episode 22 now, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
There's not many excuses anymore.
No, they should have found their feet by now. So this is an example of, you know, where the show is just already sort of on autopilot, to be honest. But I think the flip side of this final scene that I did quite like, before it goes all weird and mad at the end with all blue light coming out of Michelle and fuck knows what that was all about.
Yeah, that was weird.
I don't know what that was about. And they don't, as we've established. But I like the fact that instead of killing Fiore, she kind of makes him confess, because she doesn't say anything, but he, under the weight of knowing that it's Charlie in there and being guilty for what he did, he tells his wife, I killed him, you know, I covered it up. And I quite like that. And then obviously then he goes down for it, doesn't he, you know, and he gets the justice that he's deserved. But it could have been that he died and Mulder got there too late or didn't save him or whatever, but it doesn't.
The problem with would have been, not from a story point of view, but from maybe a fan reaction point of view, maybe, if you have this little girl kill this grown up,
yeah,
the little girl's got to go to prison for that.
Well, yeah, and you know they go to pains, don't they? Once it's all resolved and she's okay and all the weirdness is gone, that she doesn't remember anything and she doesn't get prosecuted or anything because she was just a victim, really.
Yeah,
of whatever the fuck it was. And you know, at the end, as we talked about earlier, that Howard Gordon had no idea how to end it properly, and at the end, you just get Mulder go. It's unexplained, fuck knows.
Yeah.
You might as well just do that. You know, he just slowly pushes into his face because the director didn't like know what the fuck to do at this point. Yeah.
Just have him shrug and go, not a Scooby.
No idea. Next.
Yeah.
you end up feeling kind of at the end, well, what was the point? What was the point of all of that, really? It doesn't do anything in particularly. It doesn't do anything badly, but it doesn't do anything particularly interestingly either. It doesn't do a revenge story. It doesn't do a cop story. It doesn't do a reincarnation story. It doesn't do a creepy omen child story. It does all of those things, but it does none of them.
Yeah, it just kind of marks time for 40 minutes, doesn't it?
And you end up going, fine, okay, I won't watch that one again.
Yeah, pretty much my reaction when we got to the end of it last night. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Fine. Yeah, fine.
Literally
next.
Went to bed, woke up the next morning and forgot all about it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, that was Born Again. So next up, I'm going to ask you, do you believe in, Brooker, the paranormality of the day? And the simple one this week is, do you believe in reincarnation?
My missus can hear you and she's just giving me such a look. And you fucking best. You fucking better. Yes, dear, I do. Yes. I think I do. In reality, I do think I do. I don't think it's something necessarily you can prove, but I do think there's been far too many of these past life kind of experiences that people have to deny that it's a thing. You know, I've never had one myself, but I do think it's too common a paranormal story to. It must have some weight to it somewhere.
It's obviously a long held. It's described as a philosophical and religious concept that a living being after biological death can begin a new life in a new body. This is also called rebirth or transmigration. Which is a word Mulder does use at various points in the show, you know, not just this episode, but he often says transmigration of the soul, you know, he likes using transmigration. And it's part of the samsara doctrine of cyclic existence. And it's a central tenet of all major Indian religions, namely Buddhism, Hinduism, Jainism, Sikhism. It's something that is, I think, more, it's in Christianity and Islam and a lot of, almost all the religions, but it does seem to be a lot more of a Far Eastern kind of philosophy, quite often, doesn't it?
It does. I don't know why that is. I wouldn't want to hazard a guess. I have to say I'm a little bit scared of it because I'm a bit of a bell end and I'm quite likely to come back as a tapeworm. But you know, someone's got to, I suppose.
I quite like the TV show Bottom, in which they want to come back as a bra.
that could be fun.
It all comes down, again, we've talked about it in previous episodes, but it all comes down to whether or not you believe in an afterlife. You know, because for a soul to be reborn, then there has to be some place potentially that you go, you know, and then you're shifted out again. It's like a conveyor belt. I don't know.
How horribly disappointing, though, to go off to a better place. No, back you go.
Off you go. Yeah.
Start again, motherfucker. Yeah.
You're not going to remember anything that happened before, right? So you won't. It will be completely fresh to you. Although in the case of Born Again, that's not true, is it? Because he's still the same guy. And this is the whole thing. The idea of reincarnation usually isn't that you are the same person. So if when I die and, you know, I'm born again, I won't be Tony Black. I'll be whatever, you know, whoever. And you think, well, if that's true, what's the point? You know, it's not you, is it? It's just, it's an energy, it's a whatever. It's a consciousness. So it's an interesting idea, and it's, for the purposes of fiction, you get lots of good stuff out of it, really.
Oh yes, there's plenty of wiggle room and plenty of playing you can do with that kind of belief and that kind of mythology to have a lot of fun with it in shows like The X-Files and Ilk.
Definitely, but it's I think if it is a thing, if reincarnation is a thing, I kind of want to come back as me, as egotistical as that sounds. It's not me thinking I'm awesome. It's that I kind of want another go. Do you know what I mean? Because then I'll come back, presumably in a young, like in, as a baby or whatever, and I get to go again. And I'd go, right, well, here we go. I've got all my memories of everything before, you know, and I can start again. And I'll live in the future with, like, hoverboards and all that stuff. Be great.
And the knowledge that it's not a good idea to jump off the top of the garage with nothing but an umbrella to try and fly it.
Yeah, which we all did as kids.
Yeah, yes, we did.
We did.
some of us only had, like, massive balconies in the concrete jungle council estates we grew up in. Those floors hurt when you hit them, man.
I do know what you're talking about, because I didn't grow up in a council estate, but I grew up in a relatively urban area, and we used to have skateboards, but I couldn't skate, so I used to get on them, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle skateboard, so this shows it's the 90s, and I used to get on it, and I used to go, there was a selection of hills, like cul-de-sac hills next to where I lived, and I used to go up one. And I used to get on it face first and launch myself down this hill in the middle of the road. And yeah, and we'd have races. And I'd be,
wow.
How I didn't die, I will never know. And if somebody said that to me now, Tony, do you want to have a face first race on a skateboard down a main cul-de-sac road? I'd be like, well, get me fucking pissed first, and I might say yes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, this is half the problem, though, isn't it? All of the trouble I got into was, usually there was alcohol involved somewhere. You know?
Yeah.
Oh, Brooks, let's steal this trolley and see how far down this main road on a massive hill we can get before we fall out. You know, because we'd just come out of watching Jackass movie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or the latest episode of Dirty Sanchez. But it's. I think if reincarnation was definitely a confirmed thing, a lot more people would do all that kind of. Everyone would be Johnny Knoxville, because everyone would go, fuck it, I'm coming back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is my first go. I'll do it again later. I'll do it properly next time.
I'll have another try. But as far as we know, we only get one life and one soul. So use it wisely, kids. That's your PSA today from from the X-Cast. Okay, so we're going to finish up by doing the X-Quiz. Now, you still are the reigning champion, Brooker, but you... You let yourself down last time because you didn't manage to equal your top score. Can you do it again for Born Again is the question.
I'm going to go ahead and say, considering I've already forgotten most of what we've just talked about, probably not.
Well, I'm more confident in you than you are. Let's put it that way. I've got faith. I've got faith in you.
Well, someone's got to have it, I suppose.
Exactly. So, are you ready then for five questions and a quote on Born Again?
Yeah, go on then.
Okay, here we go. Question one. Detective Barbala, from the teaser, is referred to as a regular green jeans with children. What TV show is that referencing?
I've not got a clue.
That is quite a tricky one, because it's not actually mentioned in dialogue, the show, I don't think.
Not a Scooby.
All right. Captain Kangaroo.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I never would have got that. If I'd have had 1,000 guesses, I wouldn't have got to that.
That is a tricky one. Question two. Scully references what film character when mocking Mulder's claims of reincarnation? Now, this is a not a massively famous film character, but it's from a film with the character's name in the title. So if you can get me the name, then I'll give you the point.
Oh, wow. Wow. No, I've drawn a blank. No.
Okay, it's Peter Proud from the reincarnation of Peter Proud, which I don't know if that's a film you've heard of.
I have heard of it, yeah. I've never seen it, but I have heard.
Yeah, it's a 1975 film directed by J. Lee Thompson, who directed Cape Fear in the 60s. Yeah, he's about a professor at a college in California who starts having weird dreams and things like that. It's got Margot Kidder in from Superman. So it's a bit of an obscure film, but yeah. She mentions that, but there you go. Okay, again, another tricky one. I'm worried these are too tricky. Okay, question three: name the Chinese organized crime group that Fiore claims were killing cops in the 80s. He mentions them to Mulder and Scully when he first meets them.
Oh bloody hell! Jesus Christ! No, see, I really should have taken notes this time around. Oh damn it!
It's the Wuxing Wu. Which, yeah, again, probably a tough one. Okay, question four. Scully deduces Charlie Morris drowned in seawater because he had what medical condition?
Oh, bloody hell. Oh. Wow. I have really screwed this up this time around. No.
Bradycardia. Yeah, which is a slow heart rate, defined as a heart rate under 60 beats per minute in adults. It may cause fatigue, weakness, dizziness, and very, very low rates fainting. So, yeah.
Okay.
There you go. Okay, let's hope.
Oh, I really screwed this one up.
You got two more. You can escape with some dignity. You've got this one is really just maths and deduction. And you've got to remember a key fact with this. So, question five: what year was Charlie Morris killed in? Now, if you can remember what year this episode takes place, and Mulder does date the year actually in his journal. And then you can think about how many years ago Charlie Morris died, which he's referenced several times. You'll get the year.
Crap, is it 84?
Oh, so close. 85.
85. Oh, bollocks. It was going to be 84, 85, and I couldn't remember which one.
Because he was killed 9 years ago, and the conspiracy of cops said that we'll wait 10 years before we fuck off with our money. So, okay. Well, you've still got one chance. You might get the quote. Let's see. Okay. Here we go. You need to pull yourself together, Tony. I'm not saying that to me, by the way.
Isn't they just talking to yourself? And, well, I suppose need to point, there must be when the, is it Fiore goes to see the other guy that he's conspiring with in his office?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And he it's the other guy who says it to him. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yes, you got a point. Yay!
Way.
Okay, 1 out of 6. That's...
What an awful, awful turnout considering my last go round.
I think, quite wonderfully, that's the worst one ever we've had.
That's impressive.
So you have both the title of the best and the worst score.
I'm almost okay with that.
You bookend the quiz.
I have to admit that this week got away from me a lot. I ended up doing far too many things in far too short a space of time. So taking notes kind of had to take a back seat while I'd done work.
I think you can be forgiven because they were quite tricky questions and the episode is very unremarkable. So, no, you forgiven, more than forgiven. And you did get a point, so you were all right, you know. You're both the best and the worst at the quiz. Be proud. Okay, so that's it. That's it for another X-Cast. We've only got two more, and you're joining me for both of them, Brooker. You're going to be back for the last two episodes of the season, Roland and then the Erlenmeyer Flask.
I am very much forward to that.
Yeah, it will be fun. It will be fun. We're nearly there, and then we'll be having a little bit of a break for a while once we've done season one. But, yeah, it's exciting times. Until you're back then for Roland next week, thank you for joining me again.
Thank you for having me on again. It's always a laugh. Even if we are being negative far too much of the time, it's always a laugh.
It's true. Very true. Where else are you being negative on the internet right now?
I'm always negative. I'm a moany old man on Twitter. I'd at Brooker411 if you want to see me just piss and moan about whatever seems to be annoying me that particular day. And I do a lot of writing and podcasting for failed critics. I do a lot of their film reviews for them.
Yes, always good stuff. Always good stuff. over at File Critics, Brooker does. So yeah, check his stuff out. Check his stuff out. He also appears on Pick a Flick as well, other Black Hole Media podcast, every so often. And yeah, you can find the X-Cast there, at Black Hole Media. And we've got our own Twitter, at the X_cast on Twitter. And we're on Facebook as well. So look us up at the X-Cast. There's always stuff going up there, being posted. And you can find all our podcasts and all the other podcasts we do at www.blackholepodcasts.com. So come and check us out and have a listen. So yeah, we'll be back for the really quite bizarre Roland, which is going to be a really, really interesting one to talk about, because it's not like a lot of other X-Files. So remember, guys, as always, trust no one.